Welcome along to the Rugby Pass podcast, rugbypass.com for all your rugby viewing pleasure throughout Asia. Today on the Rugby Pass, Scotty Stevenson joined by former All Black Ian Jones, 79 test matches to his name on the eve of South Africa taking on the All Blacks at Kings Park in Durban. And it was the scene, Ian Jones, before we get into the week's events of, well, the start of what was arguably in your career one of your great achievements, winning a test series in South Africa in that first test in 1996 at Durban.
Yeah, afternoon, Scotty. Afternoon, everyone. Yeah, look, we had a four test series effectively against South Africa in 1996. We played them in Cape Town the week before the Durban encounter you're talking about to square off the tri-series. That was a brutal encounter, which we won and won the tri-series and then went into that Durban test match. And the whole focus of the week was to win that game, give ourselves the opportunity to win in Pretoria. If we did that, two zip, we wouldn't have to go to Ellis Park. And, you know, Ellis Park, well, even today, is just it's their ground. It's, you know, I'm a bit surprised they're not actually playing the All Blacks there. They have to share it around. I understand that. But I thought the Springboks would always play the All Blacks either at Pretoria or in Ellis Park. We didn't have to do that because we won this brutal encounter down in sea level. And yeah, it's an amazing, amazing venue. I had the first opportunity in 92 when the All Blacks toured there for the first time. Our first game was actually against Natal at that ground. Look, it's changed significantly over the years, but what hasn't changed is the atmosphere, and the All Blacks will experience that tomorrow.
Explain to us what it's like to run out in a ground like that, because like most South African grounds, the fans seem very close and those stands are very steep at Kings Park. When you ran out there after the Cape Town experience, as you mentioned, which wrapped up the inaugural Tri-Series tournament, and then you switched focus to a test series, a three-match series. When you ran out onto that park as an All Black in All Black colours against the Springboks, what was the atmosphere like? What was the environment like?
Intense, an absolute word, intense, because you know the physicality that's going to come at you on the field, and that physicality has been talked about all week in the local press and the local fans who come to your trainings, and they're so knowledgeable, not just in Durban, but the whole of South Africa. They know and understand, certainly did back in the day, how the Springboks need to play and should play. And so you're left under no illusions what you're about to face. And that is a good and bad thing. A, you know what's coming at you. B, you also know what's coming at you. And that's tough as well. Think about running out into any stadium in South Africa. Architects over there love concrete. And so every ground you play at is concrete jungle. And with a concrete jungle, it just brings those steep, steep stands. You know, over the years, they're often open stands down in Durban. But just, I think the concrete somehow just brings that noise in and keeps it in the ground. And so, you know, you've got to clear all that from the mind, because clearly you're a little bit worried about it and clearly you're very anxious about what you're about to encounter, but you also need to be very clear in what you need to do. So, hey, it's a hell of a challenge, Scotty. It's what we train and live and why you want to become an All Black, to have that those challenges. You know, funny enough, in 96, some of that team were quite young, and their biggest challenge and their biggest memory was always facing the Wallabies. Mm. And there's a generation of us, including the coach and the skip and a few of the older guys, who grew up understanding what those All Black South African test matches are all about. So it's quite a mixed bunch, actually, when the All Blacks in 96. Listen, every one of those All Blacks have now come to appreciate what a great rivalry it is.
96 went on then to Pretoria in that famous victory, that first test series win. And the one image that always stuck out for me watching that game was Sean Fitzpatrick, your captain, at the end of the match, thumping his fist on the ground. Were you aware, and I know you're a great student of the game and a great admirer of the All Blacks' legacy and your part in it, were you aware going into that match about what was at stake?
Yeah, absolutely. Very aware from my own understanding and own history of what was about and what great opportunity that we had. Maybe not an opportunity that was afforded other touring teams, either a four-tier series or, you know, other circumstances. Yeah, and just made aware by the coach, John Hart, who was also a great student of the game and knew that this All Black team, and he'd expanded this All Black team to give himself and ourselves the best opportunity to ever win over there. So there was a lot of things in our favour as well. And we're up against a very, very committed, very, very physical Springbok side. And I think at the end, when Sean was lying on the ground, it was It was relief that we'd won this test match, because the test, Scotty, as you know and you've watched a lot of them, isn't just about the 80 minutes that we see on the Saturday. That's just such a small part of the test. The test is the build-up, how you handle the mental strain during the week, how you handle sort of the media intensity and the scrutiny during the week, and how you handle the physicality and the ebbs and flows of a test match. And at the end of it, Shawnee was just physically and mentally exhausted. We were all out on our feet. In fact, we were out on our feet after 5 or 6 minutes. They'd scored the opening try, that bottom left-hand corner, and most of us were thinking right then, geez, we cannot handle another 70 minutes of this. And the last 3 to 4, we were defending that whole time, flying wedges and all. We did. You know, there wasn't even much celebration. I was asked this question of the week about the celebration of sheds. There wasn't any. We were just so physically and mentally exhausted. It was, you know, you were just sitting in that shed going, phew, well, God, thank Christ that's over, sort of thing. But, yeah, a great highlight. Look, every time I had a chance to wear that jersey, it's up there. But that one will have to be pretty special.
20 years now since that time. That's flown by, that 20 years. I can imagine it feels like yesterday for you at times. And now, 20 years later, here are the All Blacks again on the cusp of history, trying to keep this win streak alive. 16 straight tests now, going for 17, and to equal the record that they share with South Africa. And it's been a tumultuous week for the All Blacks. And let's touch on a few of those things, because I mentioned before that you're a fine believer in the legacy of the All Blacks and what that's meant to you personally and how that's defined your life. This week, Aaron Smith has made, by his own admission, a huge mistake. Does his actions tarnish the All Black brand or diminish what he has achieved in that All Black jersey? The actions this week, if you've been living under a rock, Aaron Smith, caught by a member of the public engaging in an act with a female in a toilet at an airport. It seems rather seedy, but to you, does it seem disappointing as a former All Black, as someone who's worn the jersey?
No, it's a mistake. I don't see it by disappointing. I don't see it affecting the All Black brand greatly. I see it affecting Aaron Smith's brand a little bit more than the power of the All Black brand. In terms of what's going to happen in preparation for this week, the pressure that he's put on his teammates over there, I actually don't see that being a problem. Look, the All Blacks themselves got, with the greatest respect to Aaron Smith, his partner, and all their families, they've got a real big job and a real big concerns themselves that they have to focus fully on. And I think history has shown us over the years, if you've dropped the ball in terms of your own personal preparations heading into a test match of this magnitude, you're going to lose. The All Black players themselves, the experience, understand that. And listen, they have got such a big job ahead of them, enough to worry about without their great mate Aaron Smith and what he's done sort of off the field. The All Black brand and the All Black family are very strong, and we're very supportive of both Aaron, his partner's family, and everyone else concerned with it. And we're a forgiving lot, both in New Zealand and around the world. Aaron Smith has fronted up. He's come front foot and said, I've made this mistake. To most people, Scotty, I think that's enough for all of us. But the All Blacks won't be dwelling on it, mate. When they're running out there and the preparation for what they've had to do, they've had to be fully focused on job at hand.
They crushed the Springboks in Christchurch. And, I mean, it was a miserable loss for that Springbok team. Alistair Coetzee now has reverted to type. He's taken Mornay Steyn back in as a starting first 5/8. We saw in their last test victory that they've gone back to that kick-and-stick game that Mornay plays so well. But he's not at his home deck at Loftus-Versfeld. He is at sea level. And the All Blacks have shown throughout this rugby championship and over the last couple of seasons that they can return kicks. Even the good kicks can sometimes lead to All Black points. Mornay Steyn, is he the key and central figure for South Africa in this test match?
Well, he's one of a cog. I mean, the guys up front, you know, Easterbeth and those sorts of guys need to physically actually start to intimidate the All Blacks. I mean, that's easier said than done, but they actually have to sort of front foot it there and do whatever they need to do to disrupt the All Blacks. I mean, you see this test match being a very stop-start affair. The South Africans trying to control the speed of it where they can, slow ball down or slow the flow of play where they can. Look, I have to say, and I know in this modern world where the rules dictate movement and you know a need and a thirst for entertainment when test matches are on. I personally have to say I like the way the South Africans are going about things. I think it suits their psyche. I think it suits what's happened in the past in that green jersey. I think they understand that game really well. I know their spectators love the way they play that game, and they'll get them into it. Look, we all like open of interest play, but you know, open of interest play going backwards and just passing 50-50, the South African fans do not respect. So, look, I like that psyche. I like their mentality. Not everyone can be the All Blacks and play like New Zealanders. You've got to play like who you are. So I do like that. I mean, they got some of the best kick chasers in the world. Brian Habana, hopefully he plays, and guys that will just run and put pressure on a good or bad kick. And it may be their day. It really may be their day, and I hope it is. But this is a damn good All Black side too, Scotty, they're chasing greatness. They really are. And when you string together so many test wins, you need something else. It's not just another test match. I mean, another test match in All Black jersey, that is big motivation. But something else. Because you don't get bored with winning, but sometimes you can get complacent with winning, and sometimes it comes too easy, the wins, and you have to work damn hard in a test match environment to get that win. I think something like this will be very special for the All Blacks to do that, and once more they set themselves up with the opportunity to create history, which this team wants to do, publicly said that, and that's not always been the New Zealand way, to create history in Eden Park in a couple of weeks' time.
We're speaking with Ian Jones on the Rugby Pass podcast. Today is the 7th of October, and we change now to the Northern Hemisphere, where Australia will face Argentina at Twickenham. An amazing thing for me, for Argentina to give up their home advantage and take it to Twickenham. Most people think this is all about dollars and cents. Is there more to this for Argentina, though, to take a match to Twickenham, which we understand will boast a crowd of around 50, maybe more thousand people?
I assume there is. Look, I don't know the ins and outs of why they've gone up there, to be perfectly honest with you, Scotty, but this is a team that probably feels comfortable playing over in Europe. We've seen the successes they've had in past World Cups up in Europe and past tours up in Europe. So, you know, to go to a neutral venue, which it is for both sides, they clearly feel pretty comfortable there. And it's probably a good development phase, I guess, for Argentinian football to be able to play over there. It'll be a fascinating test match. It really will. I mean, somehow they've got to harness that sort of Latin temperament in Twickenham. How they do that, they'll have their own special ways to do that. I really hope they do. And they a team trying to balance out the brutality of their game, where they were so good in Hamilton, where there was opportunities behind the ruck for the pick-and-go game, and their wingers being really busy attacking close to the ruck and getting over the game line against the All Blacks, where that was shut out the test a couple of weeks later against the Aussies, where they have the opportunity, I think, to do that. Mm. I'd like to see them, you know, first work really hard up front and then get the rewards if they can go wide after that.
Australian rugby still continues to struggle under Michael Checker. And I know he's got his injury concerns. I know he's got some players he can't select due to that. But do you see any improvement at all in what he's trying to do with this team? He tried the bully route against the All Blacks. That backfired on him. He's tried to look for some more expansive play out of them. That didn't work against South Africa. I mean, are his options now limited in terms of creating a plan that works?
Well, I mean, without once more being right close to the Wallaby camp, I just see them in this siege mentality at the moment, that they're actually not, because they're getting barbs from everywhere, they've actually forgotten why they're actually out there playing the game. And you know, a guy like Izzy Folau, for instance, he's got to smile. You've got to realise why he is the best guy out there and only do what he does well. And if each and every player does their job with a smile on their face and playing the game why they love playing the game, I reckon it will come right for the Wallabies. But they've got to get over that. And Checker's got to be the guy who leads that. He's got to be the guy that doesn't stand up in front of the media or stand up in front of the team and look dour and think the weight of the world is on his shoulders. And it's a tough gig coaching the Wallabies. It's not a tough gig coaching the Wallabies. It must be a wonderful job to be able to coach a team that can be so expansive, can be so much fun. I mean, we love the Aussie larrikin spirit. If they play with that once more again, you know, some of the great teams over the years in the Wallaby rugby have just been a hoot on and off the field. I don't see this team right now being a hoot on off the field. And I think that's where we've got to get back to. That's nothing to do with tactics. It's nothing to do with the skill of these players. It's a lot to do with what headspace they're at. They get into that headspace about enjoying each other's company, enjoying the game, and it's a friggin' wonderful game. They'll be very, very good because of it.
Finally on the Rugby Pass podcast today, Jonesy, we want to take you back to England. You've had experience in English club rugby, but that landscape has changed somewhat since your days up at the Cherry and Whites and your experiences in the North. Eddie Jones has picked his first squad ahead of the November internationals, and he's run headlong into his first real clash with the England clubs. They've come out today and said they don't think that the England team should be full-on training during a week in which the Premiership is continuing. Eddie Jones has got to get a squad together for November and, importantly, keep the momentum that he's building with this team. Are we going to see a genuine all-guns-blazing showdown between Eddie Jones and the Premiership clubs?
I suspect you might. I mean, they are all powerful. They're owned by, you know, the individual owners who have a lot of say and sway, and I mean, they pay... The individual player gets the most amount of money during his 12-month contract from his club, not from the England Rugby Union. Well, playing for the England Rugby Union is a pretty special encounter as well. So, yeah, you can see something happening, and Eddie's got to understand, I guess, the system. He's trying to come in and do what he thinks is best for the team, and that's, you know, absolutely within his right. And can you have too hard a training session? I mean, the guys have to train as they prepare to play the game. You can't go about anything in this game half-hearted. Unfortunately, he's had these two terrible injuries. Was a broken jaw and a broken leg or something. I mean, that's terrible to have, but gee, that could happen on any occasion.
Yeah, absolutely.
And unfortunately, on this occasion, it happened in an England training run. Is that a player welfare issue? Well, I'm not sure it really is. It's just something that they're going to have to deal with and sort out. And, yeah, there will be a clash of... There's a clash of ideas, for a start, isn't there? And that's something they need to sort out, because they need to sort it out very quickly, because those Autumn Internationals aren't too far away.
Finally, mate, today, one more thing. Dan Carter, Joe Rokitoko both fingered in a French newspaper article in L'Equipe, saying they have failed a test for... basically corticosteroids, which are not anabolic steroids, most likely a cortisone injection. Their agent, Simon Porter, has come out and said, look, they have special therapeutic use exemptions for these, although those are still to materialise. Is this risky business at the moment? If the doctor of their club has not filed the paperwork, can we see Rokitoko and Dan Carter and Juan Imhoff as well in some serious hot water?
Well, I look at the legal side, but let's hope not. I mean, the game wasn't played in France, and maybe because it was played in Spain, they may have different rules that don't cross over the border. I don't know that. Knowing about French medicine, I know French medicine is very different than European medicine and the way they go about things. I mean, you just look at once more at the timeline, though. I know both Joe and Dan, at the end of a long year, were getting injured towards the end of the playoff, and you assume when they came back they had some form of treatment. Maybe that treatment was a cortisone cream or an injection, I don't know. What I do know is that the integrity of Dan Carter, Joe Rokitoko, should never be put into question. They would never do anything, in my knowledge of the two gentlemen, that would be outside what was deemed reasonable leading into a game. And, hopefully the paperwork will get sorted out. But, you know, when the translation barrier comes into anything, Scotty, things get lost in the mist. And let's hope it gets sorted out.
Absolutely right. Ian Jones, our special guest today on the Rugby Pass podcast. That's it for today. We'll join you next week, of course, and enjoy your footy over the weekend. Rugbypass.com for all your viewing pleasure.